Hi everyone, my name is Tyler and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
I have a sponsor who I call, well, at this point, just enough to stay alive, unfortunately. Should be calling him more, but I also have a home group. I sponsor other men and I do my best to talk to an alcoholic every day. And I start off by saying this because I would always hear people start off this way and I thought, wow, you know, everyone just says it, they just repeat it, it's a broken record. But I saw the consistency, and consistency is what helped get me sober initially. So I try to also be consistent with my story. And recently my program has taken a bit of a turn. My beautiful wife and I just had our first child, and it's been a blessing for sobriety. It's also just changed my program slightly. I've had to just adapt. And luckily my sponsor has also had a kid. He's about like 3 months ahead of me, so we've been kind of balancing back and forth with each other's schedules, but we do eventually talk. But I would like to talk to him more, but I do talk to other alcoholics, and I'll share more into talking to alcoholics as my story goes on. But I want to focus on what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, and the three sides of the triangle: uni, service, and recovery. And I just heard this great speaker talk about, it doesn't matter how well you're doing one side or the other, you need to do all three at the same time. And you need to put as much effort into each side of the triangle, or else, you know, it's going to tip over. We're a stool waiting to take a drink. And I was just thinking back on the way here that, I'm sorry. My sobriety day is October 24th, 2011. That's a big one. Sorry about that. Forgot that. So I was thinking back 13 years ago when it started, and my story has gotten a little bit fuzzier over the years. It was really easy to share, you know, in the first 2 years. I got all excited because I want everybody to see how cool I was with how much I drank. But then as time went on, I realized I shouldn't be thinking so much about myself. I should be thinking about others and God. My story kind of it shrunk. And so I was just at a meeting the other night, and thankfully I was at a meeting that had a lot of newer people, and someone was sharing about their drunk log, and boom, I had a little memory bubble. And so for me, it's still crucial this day to go to meetings, because as time has gone on, I will forget who I am and why I have gotten here. And so it started off in Rappahannock County, Virginia, Sperryville. Right next to Old Rag Mountain. And I come from a family of alcoholics, extreme dysfunction. They were all rock and roll, party, and let's have some kids. Oh crap, kids actually take work and effort. Let's just drink some more. Maybe it'll just work itself out. I am a product of that. And so it's good and bad, whatever. It's my story. Definitely not the childhood that I want my son to have, but whatever. It is what it is. And so when I finally break free from my family, the family dynamic, I told myself, I'm never going to be like my parents. I'm going to be anything but my parents. So I'm just going to drink socially. I'm going to make sure other people are around me so I can kind of blend in. But it didn't take much time. So I was immediately blacking out. I got that drink, and it was this immediate blackout. I suffered alcohol poisoning, nerve damage, lost feeling in my fingers. I've got spinal damage. It was like a whole mess. You know, the law, all sorts of crap. Fighting people who were way bigger than me. It was a miracle. We fought on soft ground. And it was a hell of a journey, but it got me to the point where I couldn't balance my drinking. And so, and I mean, I don't mean control. I mean, balance. I didn't want to control it. I wanted to go off the rails, but to balance it, like, okay, I need this much money to drink the way I want. And so I would go to parties and I would like hoard alcohol in different corners of their house. I would take their alcohol and put their alcohol around different parts of their house. So I always had enough. And then if there was my little squirrel nests were left over, I would then bring that home. So I had a lovely collection because I always had to pace myself. And then friends caught on, and, you know, I started switching friend groups because my drinking would turn me into someone completely different. I'd be acting like this, all nice and polite and well-mannered, and then I would turn into this demon, someone who would want to steal your girlfriend just because it's your girlfriend, someone who would want to just steal from you just because it's fun, someone who'd want to fight you, cry. It would always baffle people how much I would change. It's just night and day. And I kept playing this whole facade of like, oh well, I'm sorry I act like this. Let's see, which lie have I told? Oh yeah, my mother, she's an alcoholic, boo-hoo, whatever. They'd be like, oh, you poor thing. So eventually I couldn't keep up with that. I'd either change friend groups or start drinking by myself. And so drinking by myself, yeah, it put me closer in the category of my parents as being an alcoholic, but I didn't have to answer to all these different people. And I also had to change what I was drinking, because with that whole balancing act, remember, I didn't want to control my drinking. I wanted to balance it. I realized that I got a little too wild with tequila, so maybe I can switch to wine. Okay, wine's getting a little too expensive, so let me just switch to bagged wine because I can chug it really quickly. Or maybe if I drink champagne, then maybe the price tag will help me kind of pace myself out more. There was a whole strategy going on in my head, but I always ended up blacking out at the end of the night. And another dangerous thing about my blacking out was that I would drink and drive. I loved driving, and it is a miracle that I only got into one accident and no one else was involved. I mean, by the grace of God, I didn't injure anyone. Because drinking driving is serious. It's terrible. Like you already know all the statistics behind drinking driving. So that was a consequence that I didn't, I'm sorry, that was an action, my drinking driving that I didn't want to own up to. So finally, after losing friendships, not facing my family because I was turning into my parents, I couldn't face my siblings, and money, losing money, losing relationships, crashing. The crashing is really what woke me up, because I finally did something that one of my parents did, and that's when I was like, okay, so maybe drinking is getting a little out of control, but I don't want to control it. And I don't know if I should even try to balance it. Maybe I should just put it on pause, and maybe I'll just smoke the alcoholic alternative. And so I tried doing that, but there's always that thing in the back of your head. It's like, this is not enough. This is not enough. I need more. I need more. I need more. And eventually, I couldn't handle the voices, and I couldn't handle the mental insanity in between the drinks, and I decided to go to a meeting. This was not to control my drinking, but this was to just try to find a new path. I needed to now balance my life. I needed to try to find a job. And so, since whatever I was doing was not working, I needed to maybe try a meeting. And so I went to a meeting, but I was like, eh, this isn't for me. Maybe I need to become Catholic. So I started taking CCD classes. And I figured, Catholics, they seem like they have all their stuff together and they drink. So this is great. I couldn't get through the courses hungover, because there's a lot of studying when you're an adult and you're trying to become Catholic and learn how to pray to God properly. I mean, there's a lot of information. I couldn't do that drinking. So I was like, okay, maybe I'll just put that on pause. I kept trying to do this whole pause game, pause with my drinking, pause with my responsibilities, and I figured that maybe a light bulb would pop off my head. And then I think, you know what, start up, you know what, ignite that light bulb would be a drink. Like, that's exactly where I need to go. That's where I need to go back to. So I'd always go back to a drink. Fast forward through the whole drunkalog. I hit that point where I needed to face the consequences of the DWI. So I needed to go in front of the judge. And my parents, who are very savvy in this department, are like, look, you need to print out an Excel spreadsheet, show how many AA meetings you've been to, and then they'll feel sympathy for you because you're a young kid, yada, yada. I was like, great. And so I went to this meeting. It was at George Mason University. Because I didn't want to go to any that had like a young or an older and musty crowd. I wanted to go like hip and happening. I wanted to be around something lively. I didn't want to feel conviction. I wanted to be around a source of entertainment. And so I go to George Mason, and they're all sitting around, and they're doing their little roundabout thing, and they're sharing a little bit about their drunk log. And I was like, this is cool. Everyone's kind of talking about how great drinking is. That's how I perceived it. But really, George Mason meeting is, it's a great meeting. They were talking like, you know, an alcoholic sharing their story. But I perceived at the time that, oh yeah, they're just talking about how great drinking is. So I was like, yeah, you know, I used to do this and this and this. And then they're like, okay, that's great. Well, so your time's up. It's been 30 seconds. Can we move on to someone else? Because I wasn't carrying a message. So then after the meeting, a guy came up to me and was like, hey, what are you doing after this meeting? And I was like, oh, I got big stuff. I got stuff I gotta take care of. And they're like, Did you drive here? I was like, oh no, I lost my license. I don't. Like, oh, are you taking a cab home? Like, no, I don't have any money. They're like, how are you getting home? Like, oh yeah, I just walked here. It's fine. It's all good. I got big things happening. I'm an important guy, so don't worry. And he's like, you're going to go back home and drink, aren't you? I was like, oh. And that's where my head stopped. All the insanity, all the BS I was telling myself and trying to tell others just stopped. And it felt like my story and my childhood and everything before that point just started to slow down. And this guy, by the grace of God, and just where he was at in his sobriety, he 12-stepped the crap out of me. He was picking me up. I'd be in random places in Northern Virginia. He'd be like, where are you at? I'm like, walking. And so he's like, all right, I'm going to pick you up right now. We're going to go to a meeting. So this guy did some serious 12-step work. And I finally went to enough meetings to where I met the guy who was going to be my sponsor. And I met other guys who were going to be an influential part of my story. And they asked me, so what's next? I said, what do you mean? I'm here, aren't I? They're like, okay, but are you going to work the steps? Are you going to stop smoking the alcohol alternative? Are you going to actually shape up your life? And I said, look, I don't think you understand. If I stop smoking, I'm probably going to kill myself. The insanity will be so bad that I'll either take a drink or I'll kill myself. And I was like, these steps, my parents have tried this. This doesn't work. And they're like, look, you've got nothing to lose. You literally have nothing to lose. You don't have a job, a car, a wife, kid. You don't have anything. You're barely able to stay at the place that you live at. And I was like, all right, fine. I'll open up the book. I'll sit down with a sponsor. And I was like, you know, I'm not just going to pick any sponsor. I'm going to pick the most popular sponsor. Okay. This ain't going to be anyone who's boring or dull. Because I didn't want to. Yeah. Anyway, so I picked this guy. It was this 6'5", jacked Eastern European guy who had a monotone voice. I was like, that's the guy I need right there. And I'm probably going to have to fight him too, because I still have this crazy mentality that I needed to fight people for some reason. And so we sat down, we went through the book, and I was like, all right, man. So look, I get this whole thing you're trying to do. This is like a fraternity, right? This is like a pledge. Like, are you and me going to like go out? And he's like, no, just sit there, read the book. Please be quiet. All right. So he would go through the book. And again, that moment of peace would enter to my head. I would feel this, all the insanity just pause. So much so that I would fall asleep. So he was like, okay, you need to start reading, because you can't just fall asleep in the middle of reading through the steps. So I would read through the big book. And I quickly found out that as I started to dry out, I forgot how to read. And I forgot how to look at a book. And I was like, am I dyslexic? Do I have anxiety? Like, what's going on? He's like, you're finally drying out and you're finally finding some peace. And you're going nuts because your brain doesn't know what to do with all this. So I said, okay, what do I do? He said, you can listen to tapes. You can read multiple books. You can get the jumbo font. For anyone who's struggling reading this, there is a jumbo font. So there's no excuse, because I had all the excuses of not to read this, but he was a very smart man and he was like, just cut out all the excuses. So I was like, fine. So I went through the book and all my resources, and it got to the point where it was talking about having a hard time forming relationships, financial fears. Now I'm blanking the insecurities. And I was like, wow, this is really touching deep. This book is getting a little too close to home. Like, I've seen therapists, I've seen psychologists, I've seen psychiatrists, I've talked to pastors, bishops, you know, I've done it all. This is the first time something's really cutting deep, and this was written way before I was born. Why is this causing this feeling? And so he told me, just if it's too much, don't stop, but just go a little bit slower. And he said, you need to go through these swiftly, not run through the steps, but don't pause because you have some good momentum. And so that's what I did. I had to do it, you know, line by line, page by page, but I went through the book. I got to We Agnostics, and I was like, hold on, we can skip this. Remember the whole CCD Catholic thing? I've already been there, done this. I don't need religion. I grew up in a religious household, and they all crapped on us. You know, they did bad things. My father was there on the worship team, and look what kind of guy he was at home. So I was like, I don't need this whole religion crap. He said, read it anyways. It'll be useful for you in the future. So I skimmed through it, didn't even register, but get through the fourth step, and I'm like, okay, cool. I can do like a therapy. I forget how they phrased it in therapy. It was like a therapy story or whatever. You know, like write out your childhood. You say, oh no, 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 this is not a childhood. This is right there, line by line. There's four columns. Boom, there you go. Fourth column being, you know, talking about it. And so I was like, yeah, but how are you going to understand my sob story? And he's like, that's not the point of this. This is so you can dump all the crap that's in your head and start fresh. So God can enter in and rework the little squirrel cage that you got going on in there. I said, okay, all right, fine. I'll do it. And it was hard. It was hard. I was crying. I was even calling my grandmother. And I mean, that poor woman, I mean, she comes from an alcoholic home. She's not an alcoholic herself, but that woman definitely needs some Al-Anon, but that's a different story. But I was like, I was calling my sister. I was like, you're not gonna believe what they're making me do. This hurts. And they're like, you poor thing, do you need to stop? I was like, I think I do need to stop. And so my friend, the guy who was 12-stepping me constantly, even when I had a sponsor, was like, so where you at with your fourth step? He was calling me every day. I was like, you know, I think I'm going to take a break on this whole thing because it's just, you know, it's deep. It's deep, man. He's like, you're an alcoholic. I mean, you've told me you're an alcoholic, so you have no time to lose. Like, stop with all that crap. We've all had sob stories. Like, just continue. You don't have a job. You don't have a wife. You've got nothing. Just go. I was like, all right, fine. So get through the fourth step. And I didn't finish it, but... I did finish it. But before I went forward with my fifth step, I had all this insanity in my head. I was still drying out. So I had about like 2 months, maybe two or three months sober, I think. And I was going insane because I wanted to drink. I still wanted to drink at this point. It's not like I started doing the steps and I stopped wanting to drink. I wanted to drink very much so. But I realized at that point it would destroy my life. So I was at a turning point that I've heard a lot of alcoholics come to is I can't drink with alcohol. I can't drink without alcohol. What the hell am I to do? Well, it made sense in my squirrel head that I should just end my life. And so picked up the shotgun, put it in my mouth, and I was about to pull the trigger and everything just stopped. And looking back, I don't know how those series of events came to happen with me stopping, but I know that God gave me a moment of relief, of peace, and I put the gun down, the insanity stopped, and I just start talking to God honestly, like, why did you do this to me? Why did you give me this childhood? I didn't ask for this. Why did you make me an alcoholic? Why do I have to suffer? I never asked for this. I wanted to be a good kid, but this I can't stop what I'm doing. And it was still a moment I remember to this day. It still gives me goosebumps because I feel like it was the first time that I applied the third step, where I truly decided to have a conversation and just change my life and give it to this imaginary figure. And so the next day I called a friend, And luckily I was in Northern Virginia, so there was a lot of stuff to do to keep me busy. And then eventually I got to the fifth step. Fifth step happened. I cried and I tried to make excuses of like how I shouldn't share everything, and especially the sex inventory. And my sponsor was like, been there, done that, probably done it worse. So just keep going on. And sure enough, he was right about himself. I related to his story. He related to mine. And it was this weird feeling again, where my head just gets cleared. Everything stops. I get paused, or I get a moment of pause. And I didn't know what to do. I couldn't find any excuses. And so I was like, well, sponsor, what do I do? And he's like, go to the next step. I mean, they're listed in order for a reason. Okay, so you just finished step five. What's after five? I'm like, six. And so started on with step six. And, you know, we've all looked at the book and it's like a couple paragraphs. I was like, am I missing something here? Is there all the step one was like three chapters. Why is this only a few paragraphs? He's like, because this is simple. Just move on. Keep on going. And so character defects would be a whole nother thing later into my sobriety where I would lose my mind with. But in that moment, I just moved on, because the point was to get through the steps as best I could at 3 months, three, four months sober at this point. And so start getting to amends. And so I get to step nine. Yeah, I'm sorry. I get to step eight, and I'm halfway through my amends, and I'm like, perfect. I can get out of this whole rent issue that I've been having with a landlord. And because I owed him $14,000 of backed up rent, and I was a smooth talking alcoholic. So I was able to get out of that for some reason, but it was catching up, and I was still living at his house. So I thought, perfect. I can, you know, sell him on this whole men's thing. I'll let him know that I've got his name on my list and he'll be taken care of. He doesn't need to do anything. I got his rent eventually. So I show up and I'm like, hey man, I'm doing this whole men's thing through AA. I'm getting sober. I'm looking good. Don't you worry. You're going to get your money back. He's like, that's great. Here's a subpoena. I'm suing you. I'll see you in court. And I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. This doesn't say that in the book. My sponsor's like, actually, yes, it does right here. So you will accept your consequences. So I was like, okay, well, shit, did not plan on doing this in early sobriety. So, and also he was like, so you didn't get to step nine. What made you think you could start making amends without going to step nine? Again, they are in an order for a reason. So I was like, all right, sorry. I thought it could get me out of a jam. And he explained to me, the steps are not to get us out of a jam. It's for us to right our wrongs. It's for us to take responsibility. It's for us to shape us into members of society. And so I get through the list. And then as we're going through the ninth step, eighth step, he's like, you know, telling me, okay, you should make amends here. I recommend talking to someone about this amends, because I don't know why he did that, but I don't have experience. Talk to this guy about that. And so I made a plan. The whole point was to stick to the plan. Don't do that stupid thing I did where I was trying to get out of someone suing me or paying money. The point was to pay back money. The point was to right the wrongs of my past. But I needed to be in a position where I didn't make the mistakes again. And so there were some amends that were put on pause because I was only 4 months sober. I hadn't worked on my character defects at that point. And that was something he stressed. He said, if you just go to someone and say sorry, but you haven't actually changed who you are, that's not an amends. Now, unless there was certain financial stuff I couldn't make that I could start paying to. And that's when that lawsuit came into play. And he was like, right there, you need to show up to court and you need to pay what is agreed upon. And luckily, by the grace of God, I only had to pay back $7,000. But that was a lot in early sobriety when I didn't have a job and I was, you know, facing court issues with the DWI and all sorts of other stuff. So he said, but you're going to pay this back, even if you have to miss meals. And even if that means you have to have breakfast as ramen, like, you need to pay this back. You need to be resourceful. You can't just be buying whatever you can at the grocery store. You need to be resourceful. And so I didn't starve. Just a little side note. I didn't starve. I was resourceful. I asked for help. People would give me money, or they would give me food. They understood that I need to pay this guy back. And there's other people in the program who would give me food. They wouldn't give me money because they were told not to give me money. Just food. So I made it through. It really sucked, but I made it through. It was the right thing to do. Eventually I paid him back, and it was a huge weight off my shoulders because I finally did something where I didn't have to lie, cheat, or steal. And I then start going forward with the other steps. 10, 11, 12, that was where I had to go back to We Agnostics, that chapter where I was like, no, I don't need this. But now I'm at a point where I'm like, crap, I think I really do, because I don't know how to talk to God now without just yelling at him in a life or death situation. So how do I pray? How do I meditate? And so I went through the World Service, you know, AA World Service literature, went through all that. I was always suggested to keep seeking. If you feel like you're stuck, then just keep seeking. If you don't know how to meditate, well, figure it out. Ask questions, talk to other people. The whole point of the program is unity. Well, I'm sorry, one of the biggest parts of the program is unity. And so I had to go out and, yeah, so I went to some weird meditation meetings. But that was part of my journey on finding meditation. So I finally settled on meditating on patience, kindness, love, and tolerance. And that was in some part of the literature. I can't remember exactly where. I'm just not good at memorizing stuff like that. And so I settled on that. And as far as prayer, I didn't want to go to church, but I read other biblical stuff on how to pray. I read, I started out with Christianity, and that's not because this is a faith-based program. That's just because that's what I was familiar with. Figured I'll start with the Bible. I'm not here to say that that's the only way to pray, but it was what I was familiar with. So I started there, and it seemed to work for a little bit. And then taking a regular inventory, that's where my sponsor emphasized unity again. It was like, I need to have a network. I can't always rely on him. I need to have other people in my roster. And so I started to build friendships. I had a hard time making friends because I'm either all or nothing. I'm either really quiet or really obnoxious when I'm sober. So no one really wanted to be friends with me, and I don't blame them. So I ended up getting some pretty psychotic friends in the beginning, but it is what it is. You know, at least it was a network. but I started checking in with them. Like, hey, I did something. Is this bad? They'd be like, yes, you need to go tell your sponsor immediately. Like, stop what you're doing. So I got into the habit of checking in. And I remember one speaker said, he was like, I had to check in what I was eating in the morning because I never knew if I was going to be eating or stealing or drinking. So I was like, you know what, maybe I should do that. And so it was good. It was a good safety measure because I didn't know what I was doing. I was so used to living in a delusion of lying to myself a lot of the time and lying to others. So anyway, so I checked in, got into the habit of taking inventory. And then I got around to sponsoring other people. But before I could sponsor, I needed to have that spiritual awakening. So I read the appendix multiple times. And I'm like, am I missing something? What's this magic voodoo of having a spiritual awakening? Because I don't think anything's hit me yet. And this speaker was like, you'll know when you have a spiritual awakening when you have a spiritual awakening. And I was like, great. Some more like Buddhist, you know, mumbo jumbo. And then, so finally I just keep going to a bunch of meetings, and my sponsor's like, look, you just need to start reaching your hand out and, just share your story. It is what it is. And so that's what I did. Then I was like, you know what? My story needs a little bit more flair. So I started lying about my story, like who I was. Like, I was a drug addict. Because I wanted to make sure I got all the sponsees, because it was all or nothing for me. And so eventually, I forgot exactly how my sponsor found out, but he was like, so you doing drugs? This never, yeah, you smoked, but you're not a drug addict. Like, what's going on? And I was like, ooh, yes, I've been lying about my story. So had to get to a moment where that was not good. And I had a come to Jesus moment. But what I realized, a safe measure for me, again, always trying to just play it safe, because my sobriety is fragile. It's fragile still at that point, is just bring the newcomer to the message, shut up. Like, just say, hi, my name's Tyler. Do you need to talk about anything? Great. Okay, here's the message. Because I couldn't be trusted to open up my mouth. I was still lying. I couldn't help myself. So I don't think I ever had a sponsee until I was 5 years sober, maybe. But I realized that that's not the point of this program. The point is to just help others. And I was that guy who would support other sponsors. I don't know. That's just where my role fell into place. I also did some area level service. So I was just, I was still trying to be of service. And eventually some guy, I can't even, oh, I do remember the first guy. He asked me, because he was so resentful at his sponsor, he thought I would be easier. And I was like, can I take this? Like, what do I say to this? My sponsor was like, just is what it is. Talk to the other guy, because the other guy who was a sponsor, him and I were close friends. So we talked. And this guy, we went through the steps. It was great. And I was doing my best not to lie or try to sound like I was lecturing the guy. I just tried to introduce him to the book. I try to explain that I'm not here to run his life. I'm not here to be his banker, his taxi driver, his therapist. I'm here to help put his hand in his higher power's hand and just bring him through the book. That's it. And I did that. He relapsed shortly after. And that was like a, I was like, crap, did I do something wrong? Did I lie? What did I do? And my sponsor's like, that's, again, that's not the point. You're not here to save the whales. You're not here to save the masses. You're here to be of service so you don't take a drink. That's the whole point of sponsorship. So I was like, okay, well, let's try this again. So, more time goes on. And I got into a groove of sponsoring people. And it just took a while. I remember there was a lot of my friends who would start sponsoring guys like out of a year. Like, they had a year sober, and they just had this very powerful message, and they kind of had this presence about them. They had a job, they had stuff going on for them, and people were just drawn to that. And I always thought I was lacking, but I was the slow and steady type. I didn't get those external things. It took a long time for me to get that. And I realized that in order for me to get sponsees, I just need to be consistent. I need to be consistent and honest. And also not focus on the fact that I need to get sponsees. I just need to help people. And so eventually I just fell into a groove, and I got to a point where I was really resentful at, so I'm sorry, a year's passed. So I'm like a year and a half sober, and I'm getting a little resentful at my home group. I'm getting resentful at my friends because I still have this lame job. I think I just got my license back. Can't remember, because I lost my license for a really long time. But I got something back around that time. And I started getting resentful, because I was like, yeah, sure, I can sleep at night. Yeah, sure, I can make friends, but I want a girlfriend. I want a nice job. I want a really nice car that doesn't keep breaking down all the time. I want money. And I thought the program was going to give me that. The ninth step says right here, ninth step promises says right here, which it doesn't, by the way. It just says financial insecurity. It just talks about that. The insecurity that I was feeling, it was just talking about how that would just go away. I would just accept it. Not that I would get more money. And so I, with any other resentment that gets strong and powerful, I decide to, luckily not take a drink, but throw myself deep into a relationship with this new girl. She had like 2 months. And I was like, perfect. This is how I'm going to solve everything. And luckily, again, by the grace of God, she was working a way better program than me, because she dumped me like 2 months in. She was like, whoa, dude, I don't care if you have 18 months. but something's going on here. You're like way too obsessed. You've been showing up in my house way too often. I don't even know if you have a job anymore because you keep skipping your job and you're not showing up to meetings. But I was like, you don't understand. I love you. I think we can get married. She was like, okay, this is done. I was like, yeah, see, I'm just not destined for this whole sobriety thing. And I talked to my sponsor. He's like, you know, long story short, you're an idiot. And then so I'm like, go help someone else. There's nowhere in this big book where it says a new girl's going to fix your problems. You're supposed to work the steps, not work the new girl. And so I didn't know what to do. So I was like, all right, I'll just leave my home group. I'll get rid of my sponsor and I'll move back home because I need to go back to the country. Because obviously my childhood was so grand that that's what's going to fix me. So instead of going to Rappahannock, I settle in Warrenton. And I'm there. I'm not going to meetings. I'm driving around just dry, just a dry alcoholic, just hating life, getting irritable. And I start festering on how wrong my sponsor was, how much my sponsor just wronged me. Why did my sponsor do this? It was a clear indication that I had no relationship with a higher power. I had a relationship with a sponsor who I was trying to make my higher power. And so I keep playing with the thought of drinking because, you know, I'm young. Everything's fine. I can get over this. I can bounce back from drinking again. It wasn't that bad. And so I would just find myself filling up gas and then just pulling up to the Quickie Mart and just staring at the beer right there. And I'd be like, hey, I can do this. And time would just pass. And anyone who's new here, that's not a normal thing to do if you're a normal drinker. You don't just like foam at the mouth, staring outside of a gas station, looking at the beer, condensate. And so I got close. I got close to taking a drink, closest I've ever been. And so luckily, I was passing by the Little Washington meeting. If anyone's been up there, great meeting. Thursday nights, 8 o'clock. I don't know why I popped in. But I popped in because the lights were on and I saw someone. And I was like, oh, there's just one other person. I'm lonely. Let me just go talk to someone. And so I sit down and I just start crying. And I start making excuses of how I'm 18, 2 years sober, and this shouldn't be happening to me. I want to drink, but my life sucks. What am I doing wrong? And no one lectured me. It was great. They all just let me have my little moment, my little pity party. And then after the meeting, they just showed love. And that's when I discovered that part of sobriety is also learning to love myself, learn to love others, learn to accept others, learn to accept myself. I mean, love's talked about all the time in the big book, but for some reason, I just blew right past it. And so they then suggested, okay, you live in Warrenton. There's a guy who lives around there. His name is Don. Talk to him. And It was wild because he was actually he was three houses away from me. And I didn't know that. I saw him at a meeting and I was like, hey, this is pretty cool. You got a good message going on and you're old and you look wise. So can you please help me out? I'm floundering here. And he's like, yeah, sure. Just stop by my house. We'll see where this goes. And yeah, he was three houses around. And I thought this is weird. This is a little too eerie because I had no excuse. I could walk to his house to do step work because at that point I needed to go through the steps again because I had slipped back into my alcoholism. I wasn't drinking, but I was very, very close. I forgot what the steps even were. And this guy shared with me his perspective on the steps, which were just like my older sponsors, my other sponsors. And he approached it with a different attitude of love. And he was like, okay, now go. It's been a month. Like, go out and live your life. And what does that look like? You need to stop blaming others. You need to go and live your life. Sobriety is not revolved around meetings. There's a life beyond you. And I was like, I think I want to move to Florida. He's like, great, go do it. Just go. Like, you're sober, you've got a network, and everything's good. But and if that's what your higher power and your network and everyone who you've checked in with, if that's where you feel comfortable going, then go. So I went to Florida. I knew one guy, and this was actually the guy who 12-stepped me. He ended up moving down to Florida, and him and I end up sharing an apartment. And Florida was one of the best things that ever happened to me because it forced me to grow rapidly. But I immediately found a sponsor there, and I went through the steps with him. And I was still checking in with my sponsors back in Virginia, because it was explained to me that once a sponsor, always a sponsor. You always have that guy right there, always rooting for you, that you can always check in with. And so Florida was a great opportunity for me to figure out what exactly does Tyler want. And there's no joke about, the whole 5, 10, 15 year marks where 0 to 5, you find your marbles, 5 to 10, you learn how to play with your marbles, and then 10 to 15, you then realize that the world has more marbles to offer. So then I started finding my marbles. I started learning how to play with my marbles. And I found this passion, which was woodworking, and I started to expand on that. But all the while, I'm still focusing on my program, and I'm focusing on not using a woman to distract me. And I'm not sexist. I've got nothing against women. I have a beautiful wife with a child. We've been married for almost 2 years. 2 years? Almost 2 years. It's been a long day. 2 years. Okay. But I learned that I need to keep God forefront, and the program's going to help me establish a relationship with God, and then my relationships with women will follow. And so I ended up seriously looking into why in the world I can't form a relationship with the opposite sex without losing my mind. And so it took inventory. It took me going to a lot of meetings. It took me going to men's meetings. Because I ruined my life with relationships. I saw others, so I didn't want to take it lightly. I saw a lot of guys go out because of relationships. And so I did not want to take it lightly. So I did research the right way, and a lot of prayer. And so I finally, I think I was like 5 years sober. I can't remember. It was like maybe 8 years sober. But got into a relationship, and it was realized that I had a hard time staying in a relationship. So it's like, great, I got into a relationship, and I have a job, and I have money, and I'm working a program. I'm sponsoring the people. I'm checking in. I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. But why in the world can't I have a relationship with someone else who I love? And I had to start just looking at other sources. And so I did. I went to our sister program, Al-Anon, and it was a great thing that happened to me. It helped me look at myself, but I still kept AA at the forefront because I'm an alcoholic, and if I put something in front of the program, I will lose it. And so finally, I was able to stay in the relationship. Long story short, she ended up cheating on me, breaking my heart. And so it's like, after a long-term relationship, I put in all this work, then I was like, great, what am I to do now? So I know I'm going to move. So I moved back up to Virginia, and I'm there just by myself back in Warrington. Unfortunately, my sponsor had passed away, and I felt so alone, and I didn't even want to reach out to my friends because I just felt hurt. I felt like God had betrayed me again, and now I am back in Virginia. I'm around my family. And so I go back to my original sponsor, and at this point he's a little bit distance away, but we decided to come up with a plan of how he could sponsor me long distance. And it was working out. And I was starting to form a group, form a friendship, and a bunch of friendships. And then I started to, again, focus on what am I going to do with these marbles? Like, who's Tyler? What are Tyler's hobbies? How can Tyler still work the program and not be obsessed with his hobbies? And so I go to this gym and working out there, CrossFit, doing the whole deal, trying to stay single, because I'm like, I need to recenter myself. I need to make sure I'm grounded with God and with the program before I jump into a relationship. Because I need to make sure I do not drink first and foremost. And so my CrossFit coach was like, hey, so are you trying to date? I was like, absolutely not. She's like, great. So I want to set you up with, on a blind date with this girl. And I was like, I don't think you understood me. I'm not dating. There's no way. I can't do this. And she said, no. Look, okay, it's nothing serious. Just maybe just go out as friends. And I was like, I'm psychotic. I don't just do just friends. Okay. Like, I'm all or nothing. She's like, Tyler, please, can you just go on this? It won't be anything. It's just, I already told the girl I would, you know, that I'm trying to set her up with you. I'm trying to set you up with her. So just humor me. I was like, okay, fine. So again, I check in, because this is, relationships for me are like a step close to a drink. So, well, I'm sorry, unhealthy relationships. And so I check in with friends, check in with my sponsor. And at this point, I forgot to mention, I'm living with my grandma. I'm living in the basement because, you know, what do you do when you're like 10 years sober with a heartbreak? You move in with grandma. I mean, that woman basically raised me anyways, because my parents were colorful. But so I'm getting ready for this date. And I'm like, grandma, don't worry. You don't have to wait up for me. It's just going to be something short. I'm not getting into relationships. She's like, all right, whatever you say. And so I end up coming home like 4 hours later, 4 or 5. It was a long time. And sure enough, grandma, who's a night owl, is like waiting up for me. She's like, oh, so I thought this was nothing. I was like, grandma, I don't think you understand. This woman, I don't know. I might marry her. I'm not sure. I was like, I'm deeply in love. Like, this is, she's like, okay, all right, Tyler. Like, she's calmed down. She also knew. She kind of knew a little bit of my background. And so, long story short, I'm still going to meetings, and I'm even telling this amazing woman that, hey, look, I'm not seeing you on Sundays. It was Sundays. Okay. I'm not seeing you on Sundays because that's when my home group is. So sorry, Buster. And she's like, okay, all right, man. Like, it's cool. You've got commitments. Great. So do I. I have my own life that I'm living. I'm like, okay, good. So long story short, I fall deeply in love. She's the one. I know it. And, I am then struggling to keep this love that's festering in my heart from taking over my program. But again, I'm still focusing on keeping the program and God at the forefront. And nine minutes. So fast forward a little bit. We went through some serious hurdles before I proposed to her. And one turning point was that my relationship with God was terrible. I was going to meetings, but I was not praying. I was not finding the God of my higher power. So again, I had to do some seeking. So I had to just seek more. I had to learn more about meditation, and God revealed himself. He made it very well. Again, you know, when you're going through a breakup and you miss the woman, you can't really tell, is it God or is it the alcoholic insanity that just needs a relationship? But I decided to just lean on the fact that it was God. And so we got through some hurdles. We got back together, and I proposed to her, and it was like one thing after another. We made sure that we kept God at the forefront of our relationship. We went to premarital counseling. I brought her to meetings. She does not drink. She's not an alcoholic. Thank goodness. I can't, you know, I've been there, done that. She's like, not, not trying to do that again. I can't handle it. And so she she started to see what my life was about. Like, what's AA about? What does my prayer life look like? So I intertwined her with my life. And I'm not saying our marriage is perfect because I did all those things, but I'm just glad that I took the program serious enough to take a break, from relationships, and to really focus on what does God have in store for me. And like, even now with having a kid, I'm just really glad we did those premarital counseling classes. I'm glad that I went to meetings, because now meetings are like once a week. I do some Zoom and do a lot of speaker tapes, go Bob D. And prayer is different. I mean, we pray together now. And I still pray to God by myself, but it's different how I've now intertwined my program with my wife. And I'm glad I'm still doing it, because, you know, I fear my son is going to be raring to go, because he's very similar to me. I know he's only like 5 months, but he's already showing characteristics of like of myself. And I don't know, maybe it's just me being paranoid and sleep deprivation, but those are fears I'm struggling with now. Or like, what do I do with a child now? Is he going to be an alcoholic? How do I keep marriage? What do I do? I know God has all the answers, but I don't want to listen to him right now. And so life is great. Life is great now. I have a job. I might be starting my own company. I probably will be starting my own company. I don't know, but God's got that. He's my employer. Says it right there. So I'm going to lean on that. The big book generally has all the answers. I mean, if you take into account that everything goes back to God, then yes, it does have all the answers. But I live a life now that I'm not like looking behind my back or afraid to go into stores. I might run into someone. I can sleep now, minus the shoulder before the shoulder surgery and before having a lovely newborn. I could sleep, which is great. I couldn't do that when I was drunk, when I was drinking. And I've got an okay filter that tells me to pause. Like, do not say that. Please do not say that. My wife also helps me a lot with that. And I think that was God's doing, because I still had an issue of like, why do I lie? I just can't help myself. I just need to lie. But God and my wife and my sponsor and my network all help me stay on the right path. And also, I just want to touch, now that you've heard my story, I just want to touch on this individual who has already gotten 3 years. And it was amazing. His timing and when he asked me to sponsor him was perfect. It was when my wife and I were going through some serious, we were just going through some hurdles. And again, I went to the default, like, I need to work a program. And so there was a gentleman who has spoken here, I believe, Chris P, was like, hey, I'm going to give this kid your number. I can call him kid because he's like 10 years younger than me. I was like, yeah, I'm going to give you his number. I don't know if you have availability or if you're close. And I was like, man, this is perfect timing. Hell yeah, I'll do availability, because I'm losing my mind over a relationship. And he's like, that's perfect. There you go. So Bryce and I, we went to meetings in Manassas. We went through the steps. And it was perfect timing. I mean, he's met my wife. He was at my wedding. It was a very, very cool experience. And he realized that he needed to upgrade. So he got a different sponsor, and I don't blame him. which, look, I did the same thing. And even looking back with Bill W's story, if you start going through what he was like, he was a little bit of a wild one, but he had different sponsors at different turning points of his life. And I had the same experience, but once a sponsor, always a sponsor. But he was incredible. I know he goes on, oh, Tyler, you know, you saved my sobriety. But no, he saved my sobriety, seriously. And in that moment, I couldn't have, I don't know where I'd be with my wife. I'm just glad that God brought us together. So that's all I got. Hope I didn't go over it.